あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？ね、見えない。
I miss you. What's good, Internet? It's Friday, June 19th, and you're listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 322. I'm your host, Austin Walker. I'm joined once again by Geeta Jackson.
Hello.
Returning to us after vacation is Ricardo Contreras. Hi, Cotto. How you doing?
Hi. I'm doing great. I have a cat.
You got a cat. You had a vacation. I hear you became a Hanafuda master.
Oh, my God.
That's kind of the whole thing.
It was a beautiful vacation. We'll talk more about it.
Sounds amazing.
And a special guest today, Emmanuel Myberg from Motherboard. Hi, Emmanuel. How are you doing?
Good, good. Great to be here. If you see me wiggling on like our Discord video camera, it's because I have this tennis ball.
And I'm
digging it into my back.
Where's the back pain? Tell me where your back pain is.
Oh, no.
It's like right of the spine. It's like middle back, right of the spine. And it's like, this feels wonderful. What I'm doing right now is really helping a lot.
Is this like a sciatica type situation? Is this like a...
Probably. I'm not going to find out.
I'm going to give you... Hit me up after. I'm
going to
give you a stretch. I'm going to give you a stretch to do. And if it makes you feel better, then it's probably either sciatica or like... pseudo sciatica. I forget what the other version of it's called. It's something like that.
Is there two diseases? One's called sciatica, one's called just sciatica, but fake.
But fake, basically. Yeah, and it's pseudo sciatica. It's like, it's not actual sciatica. It's just like, damn, you've been sitting a lot.
that's kind of what I have.
Damn, yeah, it almost certainly is. No. It's also called wallet sciatica or hip socket neuropathy. So that's or deep gluteal syndrome, which 100% is. Damn, you've been sitting on your ass.
Deep gluteal.
You got to get
deep
up sometimes.
Deep gluteal syndrome is the name of my nerdcore rapper name, actually.
Uh-huh. It's not any less of a condition than other forms of sciatica, but I think it's like easier to address with a few stretches, which is what happened to me a few years ago when I got it. I got it when I first moved back to New York and like worked in an office again, which meant like I wasn't like walking to and from a school campus, you know, 2 miles every day, and suddenly had to like sit in an office chair all day. And also, it was when I first got back to when I first moved to Giant Bomb, and our studio just had these tall bar stools. We didn't have. Like chairs, and it was like that for 3 or 4 hours a day, and it turns out not good for your back. Anyway, I hope your back feels better, Emmanuel. Thank you for joining us. And as is, I think noble and right. I want to turn to you first and ask you, what have you been playing to keep your mind good during, even if your butt is not good and your lower back is in hell? What have you been up to? What are you playing?
So I think last time I was on, I was saying how when we went into quarantine, a lot of friends who don't necessarily play a lot of video games or any video games in the past few years were asking me what they should pick up. And what I recommended was Warzone, which is the Call of Duty Battle Royale mode that is free. And I recommend it because it's free and most people have some experience with Call of Duty, so they probably know how to play it more or less, like just basically like the moving around and the shooting. And then it's also cross-platform, so anyone can play with anyone. And what has happened since is that like a small group of coworkers and friends has bloomed around Warzone, and it's been wonderful. We have like a really good regular group of people playing. And it's something that I haven't had in a long time.
Say, when's the last time you had like a multiplayer game?
So, I guess we were playing, PUBG there for a bit.
Yeah.
And I was actually playing with Joel and, some other people, actually some people from the Waypoint community. And that was really wonderful. But I would say that like, it's nowhere near the like buy-in that we have now from people in the group. It's like, it's totally a thing where it's like, it's 7 p.m. Everybody is in the Discord server. It's like, who wants to
damn
like pick up a group and play? And like, we're playing every night. And I think like that is mostly the like that's a the big draw is just like, oh, I can talk to my friends again, and I like we're doing an activity together, and right. like we can discuss things that aren't work.
Is this my question because I know Kato and I have definitely picked up Valorant as that equivalent game, but Valorant is not hangout time. Valorant is Valorant time. It's hangout time because it's socialization. It's like other people. Yeah. It's like you can talk through, you know, you talk during between rounds. If someone says something funny in chat, you can like kind of talk about that. But you're not like, well, how was your day? What's going on over there? Hey, how's that new cat of yours?
From my experience, when you're playing Valorant, you're mostly saying the names of locations that always have weird names.
Yes, you're always saying, you know, mid bottom.
A long.
Hookah. Yeah. They're coming through baths or showers, depending on who's on the team. But I'm guessing is that not the case with Warzone? You get to actually talk to your friends, or
Well, I would say first of all, that is probably like Warzone is probably a better game to just shoot the shit.
Yeah.
Because as you know from playing PUBG, is like there is downtime. Like that's sort of built into the flow of every PUBG game. Is like, oh, we're just parachuting now, and that's a good time to chat. And it's like, oh, we're just like going to hold this house for a bit, and that's a good time to chat. But it's funny that you bring this up because I'm going to like completely flip the script on like, oh, what a nice social time we're having, because like the group has evolved. It's like there was like a period of like, I don't know, 4 weeks where it's like, oh my God, we're all playing this game together. And it's like, how fun is this that we have like a Discord server with like 30 people and we're meeting new people and having fun. At the same time, like in the past couple of weeks, I would say definitely a group of us has peeled off and has been like, no, not peeled off from the group. It's just like, we're like serious.
Oh.
You know what I mean? It's just like we're in it for the wins. It's like, I don't want to brag, but it's like I'm in the top 2% of Warzone players globally.
Wow.
So what? When did this happen?
What? Christ.
Yeah, so it's like so it's like it's really fun to just like go in and like chat and have fun. But sometimes I'm like, okay, I need Joseph Cox. And I need,
of course, it's Joseph Cox,
Jordan Pearson, because it's like we need.
Of course,
a
it's those
day.
Two. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Like we need. So I gotta like, get a win today. I gotta actually.
Yeah, we need a win. Yeah. And it's like then it's like no talk. It's like we are communicating like, you know, actual Navy SEALs. It's like we don't have time to talk about what we have for dinner.
Right.
See, this is why I want you especially to get into Valorant, because I feel like. You're a managing editor, right? You have an organized mind when it comes to incredibly specific tasks. So I feel like you could really understand the necessity of coordination that comes with that game. I haven't played for mad long, and I still can see the map in my brain.
The thing that I find interesting is like it's not just that like communication modes change when you get better at a game like this. Was this happened to me for PUBG? It's happened for me now with Valorant. Is that you, there's like a curve on how much you talk, right? Like about the game. At the beginning, you don't talk about the game at all. You're just kind of like, oh, what am I doing? I guess I see some people, you know, what's up with your new cat or whatever. You're just trying to have a conversation. You're trying to hang out. Then as you get more, when you get deeper into the game, you're like calling out everything. You're like, I see an enemy coming through B long. They're coming through B long right now. Like, okay, I'm switching from this gun to that gun. Okay, I'm trying to give as much information as I can to everybody. And that is actually not super. It's more useful than not talking about the game at all. But it's less useful than just keeping clear comms, unless you are telling someone something very important. Mm-hmm. And like that's like the point at Valorant I'm at now is like it's silent. It's like. You are in your positions. Everyone takes their angles. Everyone knows what they're doing. We're at the point now where we're doing what's called defaulting, which is really good, which is just like on attacks. We're not like – but it used to be the case when we were playing Valorant and Kata, you can speak to this. Gita, even when you were playing with us, you could speak to this. Mm-hmm. We'd be like, all right, let's rush A or let's do like a split B. Now we're like, no. We default. We all pick – we all like go to our spot. We gather information for the first 20 seconds, 30 seconds. Yeah. Maybe we try to get a pick. which is the equivalent of like getting one kill, one quote unquote frag, and then we devise a play out of the situation, and that means way quieter comms.
Yeah,
all the information is like very specific. It's very much like I see Sage on B, and then it's like, okay, well, if Sage is on B, then that means they can't wall A. All right, let's go A. Yeah,
it's kind of.
I did actually experience a little bit of something like that when I was playing Spike Rush with Heather, because there's so many games in a row, you do end up defaulting by the end of it if you play a whole bunch in a row, because you know the small map very well by the end, and you can just know where your character should be just by doing it over and over and over again. It's exactly the thing you're talking about. It's amazing. I remember experiencing this also when I was playing more Apex, where it's just like, as soon as you know where you will be and you know that map inside and out, you know if that person's going in that direction, I just need to go over here and you don't need to talk about it.
Yeah.
It just needs to happen.
There's
yeah.
I feel like there's a similar arc in fighting games where as you start to like play fighting games and aren't really aware of what the neutral game is, you might go in with a plan and try to execute on a specific combo instead of trying to find the openings, right? Like, this is what default is. It's understanding that the neutral game has to be spread across the whole map and not just in one choke point, because then you're giving up a lot of... You sent over a video, actually, about this map control.
Yes.
That, you know, can get really easy to, like, get bogged down into when you think... When you get rushed by five people and you're, like, one or two on one... site, it can seem like that's a really effective measure, but when you play that correctly, you back off, you still have all five of your team, and it's much easier to surround a site with the whole of your team than it is to try to defend five people rushing you on the site, right? Like, there's different reactions that you understand when you're playing default than when you think when you're like rushing one site, and it's been really great to like see the people that I've been playing with like pick that up and like start, like, it feels really good when you execute well on that next level of like strategy.
I also am curious, Emmanuel, have you felt the thing of on the way to getting good, you get way worse? Because that's where this like yesterday was good, but like the 2 days before that, I was just like a disaster while playing Valorant in a way that made me kind of demoralized. And it's like, I'm like this because I'm trying new techniques. It's like, when I was growing up, my dad and I would go to the driving range sometimes, my dad loves golf, he was someone who was like always learning a new swing. And in that period of learning a new swing, he would be miserable at that swing. He would just be no offense, Dad, you'd be terrible at that swing. And then he'd internalize that swing and get better and move on. And then like that is how it feels like to play. That's how it feels to play a competitive game and slowly get better. Or this specific game. I don't think PUBG was like that for me. I think like we just when Patrick and I were playing PUBG basically every night, it was just linear growth. Whereas here, I'm like very roller coaster. I'm curious if that's how it is in Warzone or if you've just kind of felt yourself getting better.
It's definitely more like the ebb and flow you described, where you get really good and then all of a sudden you're really bad while you're trying to learn something new. I think a good example of that is snipers at first, for example, are really intimidating.
Sure.
It's like they seem really difficult to pull off, and then you get good and you're annihilating people. But another way it ebbs and flows is that it's like, honestly, Call of Duty is like one of the twitchiest shooters out there, and I really can't compete on that level, and I don't think anyone we play with can compete on that level. But the thing that I think we are finding success with and is really fun is that we're kind of just like writing the meta in a successful way, where it's like there's a week where, so Warzone has contracts, which are like these missions that you pick up in the game, right? So like there's a mission where you pick up the contract and you just have to go around the map and open different boxes, and you get loot from the boxes, and if you open all of them, then you get a bunch of money. There's another contract where it tells you approximately where another player is, and you can go hunt him for a reward. And then one of the most interesting things, I think, is a contract that is called Recon, where you go to a point and you hold it for a period of time, and that will show you the next circle on the map. So you can do like five of these recon missions in a row, and you'll basically see where the final circle of the map is. So there was like a week there where like every player in the game, their strategy was to, you know, do all the recons and then go to the last circle and camp it. You know what I mean? It's like, and we were like kind of on the forefront of that meta, and we were like really successful doing that. And then everybody caught on, and then we figured out another strategy, which is like, oh, we're going to go really aggressive with these bounty hunter missions where you're just like looking for other players and killing them. So it's like, we're not really good. We can't really, we're not phase level headshotting 360 no scope players, but we kind of just see what everyone else is doing and trying to like zig and zag around that. And that's been really fun. I don't know if you can do the same thing in Valorant or it's too structured for that.
Each patch has brought changes, and but the general strategy seems fairly set. What's changed the most, or what's settled, has been team comp, and I think we've just lucked into having kind of people who play most of the best team, or like the most required team comp at this point, which is Sage, who is a healer, Brimstone, who can like drop smokes. His sky smokes will give you all the cover you need, as he says. Then like some sort of an attacker, and then who else? I think, is it Breach? And there's a fourth like must have person. I'm forgetting who it is, and that's frustrating. But like it turns out we like had that comp basically. Sova or Cypher.
I think it
might be Cypher, but I don't remember now. But I remember someone said this the other day, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. I'm glad that we just have people who main all of those, four of those five, and the fifth one is like a rotation on who do you want to be your like duelist character, which is a in-game categorization of like attacker, basically. And it's like we do that, and then like, you know, we pay attention to like the way, I guess maybe the biggest example of this is just like, how the fuck do we play this new map that dropped? A new map dropped like 2 weeks ago with the launch of the game, or 3 weeks ago, and it was just hell. It was just like, this is a nightmare to play on. I feel like shit every time we play it. There's this huge open courtyard in the middle that's impossible to hold, or felt impossible to hold. And then Kato, I guess it was before you went on vacation, we had that one night where it just kind of clicked into place, and I was like, yeah, okay, this feels good.
Yeah, we ended up figuring out what the sight lines were actually in that big open space, and like understanding the different angles in that like really kind of broke it all open, because that middle, it's so dangerous to walk into that space.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like there were too many sight lines, but you know, once we kind of sat down and took a real hard look at like, oh, actually from here I've only got two angles I need to watch, and you know, yeah, that really helped a lot.
If I can tie this to another game I know one of us has been playing, and I'm kind of doing something very particular here, which is, I know we have some chill games to talk about, but right now we're in the like action zone. We're in the intense zone. Gita, I know you've been playing a game that is very action heavy, and I'm curious what your arc has been with that in terms of like internalizing the controls and internalizing the rules and like getting better at it. Do you want to talk to us about Hades?
Oh my god. So I don't know what came over me. I was thinking about...
Was it the hot people in the game Hades? The game that's filled with fucking hot people? Because that's what came over me.
Okay. Everyone's so hot. And I used to be like way horny for the Greek gods when I was like just hitting puberty.
Yeah.
We were doing that section in like history class. And then I was like, all these people have sex all the time. And I can't stop thinking about sex. Mm-hmm. So let's just dive into this. But no, I was thinking about our friend Dante Douglas, who now works for Riot Games and has written in various places doing various different things. He was on a charity live stream with me a few weeks ago for Black Lives Matter, and he played a bunch of Hades. And I just, over a couple of weeks, or that thought just stayed in my brain. I was like, wonder what that game is like. Because I bought it when it launched, when it was announced in early access. It's like one of the few games I have in the Epic launcher. Because I got it over there when it was Epic exclusive. Right. And I got it, and I was like, at the time, I was like, so I love Supergiant Games. I love Transistor. I love Pyre. It's one of the best games I've ever played.
Pyre's so fucking good.
Pyre is just good on another... Pyre, Emmanuel, if you don't know, It's basically just NBA Jam, but with feelings. It's like if NBA Jam was a visual novel.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. I
Do
think
people not
like
have
it.
Feelings about NBA Jam? There, I have major feelings about NBA
yeah.
Jam.
Pyre is like no. NBA Jam if there were ogres, and also you could make the ogres sad or happy based on your decisions. So
has Bill Clinton in it?
Also doing a large structural change and revolution towards an oppressed underclass.
Yeah, uh-huh, yeah. Also, it has also one happening. Of the best moments of voice acting in, or like it's a gimmick moment, but it's the fucking coolest gimmick moment in a video game I've ever seen, and that's all I'll say about that. People should play Pyre.
It's got an announcer like NBA Jam, except he's got this old timey, like he sounds like an evil British judge. I would say,
which so, I think the NBA should adopt.
And he's rooting against you specifically, which rocks. Like, I love every time you play it. Anyway, Emmanuel, you'd love it. So, Hades is their game. That's a roguelike, essentially. It's really difficult to describe it as anything else. It's a random rooms every single run. You get random powers, and you can level up like your character's base skills, but not the weapons permanently. Right. So you can get more chances to do death defied, which is something where if you die, you can come back with half health and you can level up the amount of you have these gemstones that you can throw at people. And they do more damage when an enemy is holding a gemstone, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of moving parts, but basically you are starting a run fresh every single time.
And it's like a gungeon style thing, which I'm saying just to tease motherboard EIC Jason to come play Hades.
Oh my god, Jason would love because you can also be so nice to people in Hades. Wow. You can pet a dog in Hades.
love to hear it, Jason.
You can pet a dog, but you can also, there's a maid named Dusa. I love her. But I bounced off it the first time I played this. I thought it was wow, for a super giant game I really couldn't fuck with. But now I feel like I used to just have a really extreme confidence problem when it came to games that were hard and all things that were hard. 'Cause I was, a smarter kid growing up, which meant that the things that came easy to me, I leaned into. And the things that were, it took any effort at all, I was like, why didn't I just do the things that are easy? And that took a long time to grow out of. And it extended into video games. And I think pushing myself to play more games that are technical based and play more competitive games meant that I wasn't afraid of the sort of gauntlet of Hades, which is that you try, you eat shit, and then you have to try again.
Yeah.
You look at, Transistor, this one in the codex, you will reveal more parts of character bios based on how much you use different weapons or talk to certain characters. It's a little bit less sort of plot essential than Hades, than Transistor was. I feel like they figured out how to do this thing. Mm-hmm. But you'll look at the requirements for how many times you have to talk to someone to get the next part of their codex entry. And it's hundreds of times.
Oh, holy
shit. You get clued in to how many times you will have to eat shit really, really early. And it makes it a lot easier to take.
Are you only talking to people once a run, basically?
Yeah, you can only talk to each person in the House of Hades once per run.
Got you.
And sometimes they'll be off that day. Sometimes Nyx is just not around.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes Achilles is somewhere else.
Can you give me the premise of this game is?
So not only is this game really complicated technically, it's got a really intense, really interesting plot that plays out over the many different runs that you have. Mm-hmm. In fact, it has a god mode if you'd rather just play million times just to get the plot. It's a god mode where you just get more powerful every time you die. So, yeah, you can give that a shot if it's not your jam. But this is about Prince Zagreus, who is trying to escape from Hades because his dad is a dick and he learned some a family secret that had been kept from him. Ooh. And it's made him want to leave forever. And helping him are the gods of Olympus, who his mother Nyx has tried to reach out to for their aid. So in order to leave, he has to defeat the enemies in the ever randomly changing rooms of Elysium and what's the one where people go to where they were basically just fine and the one where people go to where they were bad. Those three ones. I only ever remember the name of the good one.
Is one of them Tartarus?
Yes, Tartarus, Alpharus.
Alf.
Alf.
They go to Alf.
Yeah, the alien Alf. You go and talk to him for a while.
Yeah.
And then you go to the the movie Elysium. That's the last stage.
Yep.
Perfect. But yeah, so like that sets up the whole like enter the gungeon, random dungeon rooms, run thing. It's clever in the way that it levels up. I really like all the different kinds of enemies, but I also really like the way that it challenges you to just change up your playstyle all the time. You get certain bonuses for using a different weapons, but like mostly what's fun is seeing the weirdest builds you can make based on the aid that the Olympian gods give you. So right now, literally I'm right before the first boss, and the first boss is your ex-girlfriend, Megara. And I've now lost her so many times that, like, other characters in the game have been commenting on it.
No, no.
Besides, like, hey, old Meg's giving you a hard time, huh? And I'm like, shut the fuck up, uncle. Come on.
You know that this is a hard relationship for me.
Yeah. And I beat her twice, okay?
Yeah.
So it's really, you know, like, it's not like I can't do it.
Yeah.
I just, like, listen, she's been being really personal. It's getting to me. But it's so right now I have all these special boons that make my attack have more damage. Every time I get hit by something, I cast weak on the other enemies, you know, like around me, making them more vulnerable. And I also have turned my cast ability into like a heat seeking death arrow.
Okay.
And on top of that, I have Poseidon's call ability, which means when I get a certain level of amount of damage in a level, I can press F and I will turn into like a watery wave of death. Essentially, I'm impervious to enemies and I can just kind of run into them to hurt them.
Awesome.
And then on top of that, I leveled up my special. I'm using the boxing gloves also, which I've been finding really, really fun. So I've got, there's a bunch of really wacky weapons in this game. Like there's a sword and there's a spear and there's a shield, like basic stuff. But then you get like the boxing gloves. And then you get the like actual just literal gun. Like there's just a gun in this game.
Listen, gods don't fuck around.
Well, so there's a gun in this game and the Egyptians made it. Don't at me. Mm-hmm. It's the gun is one of the better and more fun weapons to play too. Like it's really good at crowd control because you can hit everything from a distance, and then its special move is that you can send like a little rocket to a certain area, so it has like a little delay. So if you have a bunch of enemies coming towards you, you can very easily lead them into that pathway and then mow down the stragglers. This is a game about ancient Greece.
Yeah. It sounds great. I will say, like, I have wanted to play this game. I'm waiting for it to come out of early access. It's still in early access, right? It's like nearly done, but
Emmanuel, if you're talking, I cannot hear you.
Say again.
Sorry, no, go ahead. Can you not hear me?
No, we can hear you. I can hear you now.
Okay. I was just gonna say, why are we waiting? Because I'm waiting as well for it to leave early access.
Because I know if I play it in early access, I won't play it when it comes out. I will be like, oh yeah, cool game. And then won't come back to it. Because that's what happens to me in early access.
I didn't play it for like 2 years, right? Like I haven't played it since it came out on early access. But I looked and actually they're saying that the last major update has already come out, and it's basically just the countdown till they were saying like late June they'll have more information on version 1.0.
So, all right, well, maybe I'll
like
start playing
any day now, basically, you know, you're going to be able to play this game. I will say at its current state, it feels really complete.
Right.
I've heard what they're just putting in, or according to their own patch notes, what they're putting in is endgame stuff, a couple of more aspects for the weapons, and eventually you'll be able to turn your weapons into different forms of the same weapon.
Ooh.
And have different abilities. Really,
that there's
so many
good.
Moving. Every time you think that you have like a handle on what's happening, the game throws you exactly the right wrench.
Yeah.
It complicates itself at exactly the right time.
I feel like I have been waiting for this game in a more general sense for a long time, because this style of like top-down action roguelike is really cool, but the things on offer in this space, I don't think have ever really spoken to me. Like, I know people love Binding of Isaac. It's just not my aesthetic. Same thing with Gungeon. Like, Gungeon seems cool. I never got deep into Nuclear Throne because I was so bad at it. And I know that if I had stuck with it, I probably would have gotten into it better. And then I'm trying to think if there's anything else even – what else is like that? What else fits in that? Recently, literally 2 days ago, I started playing this game called West of Dead, which is – It has a really cool mechanic, and the action feels fucking great. Also, Ron Perlman is the main character, which is sick. You're like Western Ghost Rider. You're like a dude with a flaming skull head and like a cool red like cape in the undead Wild West, I guess. And it's like a twin stick shooter, but you play with a controller. I guess you could play with mouse and keyboard, but I was playing with a controller. And the big mechanics are that, one, you can take cover behind, like, you know, ancient sepulchers and stuff. Not ancient, but, you know, ancient. If they feel ancient, even though they're presumably not that old, because it takes place during the Wild West, and they ain't ancient sepulchers of this build in these locations. But the big thing is that, like, there's almost like a lock on with the combat, and you have guns, and the guns, the rifle, like, gets more accurate and does more damage if you hold down the right trigger. You're like, there's a dodge button, and it's very like, it's some of the combat feels very John Woo. Some of the combat feels very like, I'm going to dodge behind this coffin and hide behind it. I'm going to slide behind this wall. I'm going to like bounce from one piece of cover to another. And that's like a different, and it's all very, very fast paced. So it's a lot different than what I expected in terms of like the gameplay. And I like it, but I actually don't think that I think the perspective is not very good. I think like it's not super good at like communicating the space. I don't know that the maps are that exciting. And so Hades has like defaulted to the one of these that I'm super excited about because I love how it looks. And because it's super giant, I bet I will love the world and the voice acting and everything else. And so I have been kind of waiting for one of these, for years now. And it sounds like it'll be out soon, like fully.
Yeah, my thing with Supergiant is they always trick me into playing a type of game I never thought I would like to play.
Totally.
With Pyre, it was like a sports game. Once I understood it was NBA Jam, it became easier. Yeah, but they were like really, really hyping the sports game level of this, and that wasn't quite my thing. And Transistor, I mean, that kind of gameplay was just very foreign to what I was playing at the time.
Right.
I don't think, I can't remember the name of the first game because I'm a sleepy geek that's been packing quite a bit.
Bastion.
Yeah. Bastion, I don't think I would have tried unless it had gotten the kinds of reviews that it had gotten from so many different kinds of outlets. And Hades, I have not played any of the games you just mentioned. And this roguelikes are not really my kind of thing. But they've managed to figure out how to tell a narrative story, like, through a roguelike, which is really, really cool. The voice acting art and the character designs are amazing. I have to say it's really funny that all the Olympian gods are basically different. They all kind of have different kinds of posh British accents. Ugh. It's very, very funny. Artemis has a very, like, lower jaw in received pronunciation, whereas, like, Poseidon almost sounds Australian. It's like he's trying too hard to be gregarious. It's so funny. And then the voice lines are all, like, very, they're, like, messy people, too. So they're always in contention with each other.
Right.
Some rooms that you'll get, you'll have to choose one god's boon over the other, and then the other god will send a whole bunch of very hard-to-defeat enemies that have their boons against you. And if you win, you get both boons, but if you usually will lose. You usually will lose to one of them. I love it. I mean, it's also perfectly suited to packing, right? Because you can do one run and then be like, okay, I'll pack for another hour.
Yeah,
I haven't been doing that. I haven't been doing that at all. But,
but you can tell yourself.
Theoretically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. God. Well, it sounds good. I can't wait for it to come out. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll dial things down a little bit and talk about some games that are maybe a little bit more chill. So we will BRB.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And we are back with our second segment today. Games you gotta play to chill the fuck out. Though actually, I don't know if I might be speaking too quickly, Emmanuel. Maybe I'm guessing that SnowRunner is the SnowRunner.
SnowRunner, yes. And I would say it is like 90% chill and 10%. I am rage quitting out of this game and perhaps uninstalling it. But it's mostly chill and good. I like it a lot. It is.
It's got to be at least a little chilly, right? There's snow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. ironically, it's like the game is called SnowRunner, and it's a sequel to this game called Spin Tires, which is a lot like. Have you played Spin Tires?
No, I've just seen a stream or two of Spin Tires, so I know what it is.
Right. And it's. Yeah, so it's like a game, it's a kind of like the Euro Truck Simulator slow game genre, and right. It's about like, hey, drive this truck from point A to point B, but most of the way there is through a very cut up, muddy road, so sometimes you're driving normally, and sometimes it takes you like 20 minutes to drive like half a mile because you're spinning your tires in deep wet mud, and a lot of effort went into simulating the look and physics of the mud, which is like the core of the game. It like really matters what kind of tires you have and how you're positioning them, and what kind of tools and like trucks and engines you have to get out of those situations. But I played this game for like, I don't know, probably 20 hours. Yeah, and damn. It's like I can go to the area of the game that has snow, but it's like I am still like in the Michigan map, which is not snowy, because it's a very large game, and I'm like obsessively going through it, trying to like do everything. So I'm not quite at the snow part.
So I have a question, yep. Because I watched a little gameplay footage of this. I watched Alex Navarro over at Giant Bomb play some of this. Is this a post-apocalyptic game? Why aren't there any? Why? Where is everyone? Where is the infrastructure? All of the roads have been destroyed. They're all muddy. Not all of them, but many of them. And there is no one else driving anywhere but you and your big truck that I've seen. Is there a premise to this game that makes it explains that, or is this just the sort of like abstract fantasy of being the one with the truck in the world where the truck will save you?
Yeah. It is, dude, it is post-apocalyptic.
I've always wanted to be the one with the truck in the world where the truck would save me.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's also saying. My summary of Big Trouble in Little China.
Yo, the first time I saw Big Trouble in Little China, it was after I stayed up all night watching the entire first season of Twin Peaks.
A perfect mix.
Really amazing. Really amazing time.
Austin, you really cut to the heart of it, because it is post-apocalyptic in many ways. And like one way is that I've actually conned a few people into like downloading and playing this game. And what I said was, it's like, oh, did you enjoy Death Stranding? And they said like, yes, I really enjoyed it. And I was like, well, this is Death Stranding with a truck.
Okay.
Which is
Truck Stranding.
Right.
Yeah, Truck Stranding. And it is really like that in every way. It's both, it's like that in like the moment to moment, where it's like Death Stranding at the end of the day is a game about like, I am going up this hill and I have to consider like every step and how I'm positioning my body and like what I'm carrying. And it's like, this game is exactly that, only with a truck. But it is also post-apocalyptic in the sense that it's like, I don't know if you've played any of the like, the kind of Eastern European simulator slow games that I'm describing, but like Farming Simulator, mm-hmm. for example. Mm-hmm. But the way those games open is just like no intro, no nothing. It's like, here's the game and you're in it. And
right.
It's like,
right. No tutorial. Go deliver it. No, right.
Figure it out. You know yeah. what I mean? And I don't think that's like a very deliberate design decision. It's just kind of like messy that way.
You don't think, you so don't in think this that game, that's like a school of design that's like, hey, this is what we enjoy?
I think to a degree, it's like, let's just get to the simulation and figure it out. But there's also like a lot of the game doesn't stop and explain like, oh, this icon represents lumber.
Right.
So when you see this, understand that like this is what the lumber looks like. It's just like you kind of figure that out by trial and error. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it just feels more like UI trouble and like tutorial text issues more than it does like we want the player to like slowly figure this out by themselves. Right, it's like a mix of both, I think. Anyway, but like this game opens and it's like you're in Michigan and it's like there was a flood and now you're driving the truck around to like supposedly like pull this small Michigan rural town out of this crisis. But it's like there's no other people. There's no named characters. It's not like, hey, here's Farmer Bob, and Farmer Bob needs you to deliver his food to town. It's just like everything is like there's four units of steel, and they need to go from point A to point B, and there's no explanation or anything. And it's like it does look post-apocalyptic, and like everything is destroyed. The roads are destroyed. The town looks like a mess. And I thought it would be cool to like slowly. Like, one of the most fun things about Death Stranding is that you're delivering things, but as you're delivering things, you make delivering things easier, right? Like, you're building an infrastructure that makes it easier. There's some of that here in the sense that it's like there's a mission to build a bridge, and then you can drive over the bridge, which is great. But it's like, it's very small things. It's not like the town is always flooded, and the roads are always ruined.
Right.
And it's
weird never going to become a Euro Truck Simulator. Like, it's never going to, like, wow, we did it. We built a national highway system, and now we can just easily go from point A to point B.
Yeah, and it's also, like, one of the... So there's, like, there are, like, timed challenges, which are, like, one type of activity in the game, and then there's, like, these small, like, go from point A to point B missions, but then there's, like, multiple part missions in every area. And those are seem to be like the tentpole missions or activities in the game. And like the first big one is like build this oil rig, like help us drill for oil in Michigan, which seems like not first priority.
No,
for something you would do
after like the flood destroys. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, disaster capitalism being what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, we will send you supplies. Also, we need your oil rights, your resource rights.
Yeah. But overall, it's been great. I know that you're a big fan of games where carefully laid plans like go horribly wrong.
Oh, you do know that about me. Yeah.
And this is like the most of that I've experienced. There's like actually like when you're trying the last leg of this like oil rig mission is you have to take the drill from one part of the map all the way across it, and you have to go through paved road, and you have to go through muddy roads and across rivers with your truck half submerged. Ugh. And it's like you really have to build up to that moment, both in terms of like, okay, I need these kind of tires, I need a strong winch, I need a crane, you need all this stuff. And then you kind of accumulate that by like doing other missions, collecting money, getting the stuff you need. And then, like, you carefully have to plan out your way to the place where you need to deliver the drill. Because it's, like, the truck is literally so big that it's not going to be able to make some turns or, like, Jesus. Go through some roads. And it's, like, I've spent, like, I don't know, altogether, like, I don't know, 3 hours, like, planning and building up to this moment. And then on the last... turn, my truck just tipped over and the drill fell off and it was stuck in the mud. And it was like, okay, calm down. It's like, it's going to be all right. I'm just going to get another truck
and
like help pull that truck out of the mud. And it's like, I spent another 20 minutes like going out, getting a truck, driving it to that location. And as I'm trying to winch the fallen truck out of the mud, my new truck, my rescue truck, also tipped over. And now I have two trucks tipped over in the ditch. And it's just like, the game is basically that.
Right,
so it's like,
right.
Yeah.
So I've been watching gameplay as you've been talking. And there is, so far, the person who I'm watching has been, like, doing fine. Just got stuck in the fucking swamp. Each time that they get stuck, all my muscles seize. Like, my back just completely clenches. I feel, like, deep anxiety. Seeing the truck sink into the mud and being like, how are you going to get out of this one? Just hurts me. So I think I've always been someone who's like, I can watch someone play this game. Or actually, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I would be better playing this game than watching it, because seeing it and not being able to like help or like try to affect change is really, really stressful to me.
I find with games like this, even if you suck while you're playing it, at least that tension is gone. So you like know what happened that caused this person to get stuck in the mud.
Right.
And so you're not just like, let me help you.
And also, how can I even help? This is a nightmare situation. Yeah. So wait, how is the snow part? Have you not even gone? You've not even checked out the snow area.
I've tried it a little bit, but honestly, I feel like, you know, I need to put some chains on my tires. I don't know if you've ever driven in like very snowy parts of the country, but it's like that when snow season is here, you have to put your chains on. And it's like,
I live in Canada, I know that's a whole culture.
There you go. Yeah. Right. So it's like, I don't quite have the gear for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'll stick with it and do it. I will say, as a tip to people who want to try it, and also as a tip for life in general, it's like, if you're in the mud spinning your wheels for like half an hour, like you're probably doing the wrong thing. You know what I mean? It's just back out and try something else.
It's not going to just suddenly go well.
Right. Right.
You can't just force it.
I really needed to hear that right now. Thank you.
No, I think that's one of the things that makes these games really good from watching them is that like, these are not, despite being games about trucks, they treat trucks as nuanced tools and not as big. I mean, you are brute forcing yourself your way through, you know, the mud a lot. You're doing things that other cars couldn't do. But when you hit a dilemma, the solution is, what tools do I have at my disposal? How do I look at the geometry and geology around me differently? Is this entire thing like busted because I forgot to measure twice, cut once? And like, I was just going to wing it on my way to the oil derrick build site or whatever. And instead I should have looked at my map and plotted out a route. And like, that stuff is cool to me. I like games where preparation is rewarded and stuff like that. So
yeah, I'm also like embarrassed to say this, but it's like, I am more like cognizant of like trucks now.
Wow. So
it's, wow. It's like the game has, these like, you know, when it's loading or something, it just is like giving you trucks facts,
truck tips,
you know?
truck facts.
No, like facts. Like, it's just like, hey, this is how many people in America have jobs that are like directly about driving trucks. And it's like, and this is how many, like, I don't know, things trucks do in our society, like deliver food and whatever. And it's just like, I mean, A, it's true, where it's just like driving trucks is a huge part of our economy.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, I'm outside and I'm seeing like the truck like roll up to my grocery store and delivering food. And I'm like,
you and me.
That's a nice truck. And then I'm like, I'm nodding like I know what's up.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, we got this. We're the ones who make this economy go, aren't we?
Yeah, dude. People don't see us, but we're here.
Yeah. You're an essential worker too, you know? That's right.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Fucking damn it. Can I pitch you the kind of slow game du jour for me? And y'all can tell me if this is more or less stressful. There's a game that just came out called Hard Space Shipbreaker. It is in early access.
Wait, that came out?
That's in early access, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Uh-huh.
Everything happened while you were gone.
Yeah, you left now. And now it's time to cut up spaceships.
Yeah.
A Hard Space Shipbreaker, which is a name, I guess. is by Blackbird Interactive, which is the developer of Homeworld and Homeworld Deserts of Karak. And I believe it takes place in that universe, which is like a kind of cool sci-fi space opera universe. Space opera is probably wrong. It's a little more hard sci-fi than that. And it is a game about being deep, deep, deep in debt. So one, very relatable. you are a shipbreaker. You are okay. Do you remember in the beginning of Star Wars? What was the game that came out last year? Jedi Fallen Order. You are someone who in that game like takes ships and cuts them up into little pieces and like turns around their parts and blah blah blah. That's what you are in this. Except instead of doing it on a big world where there's like a big junk scrapyard and you're working with a bunch of other people, it is just you and space in orbit around the Earth, and then a bunch of, one big ship at a time, basically. And you have a few tools to do your business. One is you have a spacesuit that has a backpack, like a jetpack on it, that lets you kind of move around in 3D space. You have a grapple gun that is like kind of like a... It feels like a bungee cord almost. It feels like a bungee cord gun that you could shoot out and then grab a piece and like toss it around. But it's not very, at least at first, it's not like a particularly strong pull. So you're not grapple hooking your way around. You're not very easily moving things around in 3D space or anything like that. You have a cutting laser, and eventually you have a cutting laser that can, and pretty quick actually, that can split into kind of like a vertical beam or a horizontal beam that kind of like goes like bzz, like a buzzsaw basically in both directions. And your job is to approach these ships. You kind of have these, you get a contract from this. Okay, actually, let me just back up because this game has an incredible opening. The opening of the game is you like in your apartment that has the sounds of like a cyberpunk dystopian cityscape around you. And you're looking at your computer screen, and your computer screen is like, you got an email from the shipping company, the Lynx company, the ship breaking company. You got an offer to join. Do you want to take it? And you just hit like, yes. And they're like, all right, cool. To agree, here are the terms. Like, you're going to go in debt about $1 million to them. It might even be $1 billion. It's like some outrageous amount of money just for the opportunity to work for them. You have to agree to never join a union or any sort of other labor organization. You have to agree to vote for this particular candidate in the next election. And like a bunch of other like drug use, demands and blah, 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 blah. And you're like, yeah, I guess sign me up. This is the shitty world I live in now. And then you're immediately put in this tutorial where you are floating high above the Earth in a sort of the equivalent of a space dry dock, right? So there is a pair of giant incinerators on either side of you, a pair of kind of giant hallways that go to a processing plant, and then below you, a kind of open barge that has a kind of a stasis field in the middle. Like, think of it like a big rectangle with like green matrix of lasers running through it. And then in front of you is a big spaceship. And your job is to safely as you can approach that spaceship, figure out the way to get into it and carve it into little pieces in the most profitable way possible. There are certain things that are worth more than other things in a spaceship. So, for instance, the raw, like, aluminum that makes up the shape, the spaceship's shell is not as valuable as the nanocarbon, armor that goes around it, right? And so part of your job is like, well, how do I separate the nanocarbon from the aluminum? And the answer is you have to find cut points. And to do that, you have to go into this, like, very cool different vision mode that can scan everything. And it goes into, like, extremely, like, not even Tron, but like, you know, late 80s, early 90s, like 3D visioning thing where everything is kind of flat shades. The structural elements are orange. The places you can cut are yellow. It's very pretty. And then you're like, okay, well, I can just go in there and just cut those. Like, wait a second. Is the ship pressurized? Because if it's pressurized, then if you try to just cut in the side of it, it's going to quickly depressurize and everything that's inside is going to rush out and slam you in the head and maybe kill you. Don't do that, because then you'll need to get another clone. And if you get another clone, you're going to owe the company even more money, because clones are very expensive. So then you're like, okay, well, then let me just go to the airlock. Let me check out the airlock. And you're like, well, bad news. The airlock is fucked. The airlock is actually like busted on this model. And so you have to figure out a way to cut safely to get the depressurization as if you're creating your own airlock. And maybe you can find a part of the cabin that's already depressurized and make sure there's a hole there and then make the depressurization happen in that part. But also if you do that, maybe the ship spins a little bit because of the rapid depressurization, and you got to be careful of not getting hit and thrown off course, and you better make sure that you have your fuel levels up, because if you get knocked far away, you can like get thrown so far away that you're burning fuel on your way back and end up being stuck in space and needing to try to like grapple and push your way back to the refueling station, which is terrifying. But eventually what you get is, and for, you know, I'm describing things going wrong, but for the most part, what you get is the wonderful joy of seeing a thing and slowly cutting it into little pieces, taking it apart, being like, oh, you know what? This glass is worth more money if I cut it away from the cockpit and send that to the furnace instead of just sending the whole thing into the processing plant where, like, yes, they'll get the computers, but they're just going to throw this glass away. And so you just get this just incredible – it's almost like the feeling to me is a lot like building something, even though what you're doing is taking something apart. Mm. It's very much like the sense of building Legos or a model, but it's like the same thing as like building a gunpla or something, in that what you're doing is paying a lot of attention to the way things are connected and the way things are like put together in specific ways. And then you're also working with a set of tools that are not perfect. And that is really fun, where you're like, all right, I'm floating in 3D space. I have this cool cutting laser, but I can't get it like – you're not ever going to just be like bop, bop, bop. You're never going to draw a perfect square with it. But you might get close enough. And that weirdness is so good, because what you end up being left with is at the end of any given thing, you have all these extra parts kind of floating around. So you may have spent 2 or 3 in-game days taking this thing that was once, you know, a passenger ship, cutting off the big engines on the side, sending those to get melted down for their raw material, going through the cockpit and slowly pulling out the computer and sliding it away, grabbing the reactor core. And you only have a minute or something to get the reactor core safely into stasis, because otherwise it explodes. And so you have to make sure that you've like cut a nice pathway for yourself through this ship down to the stasis barge or whatever, and get that put away safely. And then finally you're left with just like the damn shell of the thing. You're left with like, again, the nanocarbon armor on the sides. And you have one of my favorite tools in this game are these tethers that you get, which are these kind of blue lasers that you connect from a piece of the ship to another piece of like the area. So you can like shoot one next to the furnace or into the core of the processing plant, and then connect it to part of the ship that has been loosened, or like the connection to the rest of the ship has been removed, but it hasn't moved yet because it's space and it's just kind of free floating. And so you just like connect 2 or 3 tethers to that thing and watch it like bungee its way across space into the barge that you're putting everything into. And that just feels good. And then you're just left. The moment that just made me feel so good was getting all of that stuff pulled away and then seeing just – it looks like a container, like a shipping container, because like that's like the heart of the cabin on this ship, is just some aluminum beams, some titanium, and just being like, you know what? Put that whole fucking thing in the furnace. Strap 5 tethers to that thing, pull it through space, because it's so heavy, and just see it just go in there, and like, that's it. It's gone. There used to be a thing here. Now there's nothing here. It feels so good to see that happen. It's a cleansing experience. It's like taking the best shower in the world to like have a spaceship, and then the spaceship is gone after 45 minutes of you know, working on it, basically. It is also an early access, like I said, but like, oh, it's so good. I people should at least look up some gameplay footage, because it is such a unique thing. And they've nailed it tonally. They've nailed it visually. It's so fucking good.
That sounds
how much of the
sounds good.
Great.
Thank you for letting me.
How much of the homeworld stuff narrative like do you see? Because I'm actually like I love the homeworld fiction.
It seems pretty. I don't think that it's a big thing at this point, because in fact it must not be, right? Because the whole thing with homeworld is that you've lost Earth, right?
It is, but it's like the way they've built that over like Homeworld 1 and 2 in the expansion pack is like they find it again. Like they go back?
Well, then, okay. Well, then, yeah, I'm not sure, right? Like there is a big shipping company that you work for. There are characters who talk to you. There's a character who's like your handler who talks to you. I think it's like, again, I expected to come into this with the thing you talked about with the farming sim vibe of like, all right, here you go. Time to kick it off, and you're just doing the damn thing. get in there and start pulling these fuel canisters out or whatever. But instead, you get this like really nice narrative intro, and you kind of get a sense of the stakes in the world and kind of the way this is for everyone else who does this job. You definitely hear that, like, the last guy who did this, you know, or not the last guy, your mentor used to do your job, but then something happened with one of his clones, and now he can't do it anymore. He's like, oh, the less we talk about that, the better. And I'm like, how did your clone break so bad? What do you mean? So yeah, I don't know that it's going to give you like the full narrative experience, but I would say that they're able to bring to bear their storytelling techniques or their like their ability to create a space that feels like a world. You know, I'm really enjoying it. It's a really fun way to wind down and just like take a cutting laser to a big spaceship and start moving through its different cabins and get a sense of
who doesn't want to take a big cutting laser to a spaceship and start moving through its cabins.
That's what I'm saying.
I can't think of anyone that doesn't want that.
Me either. I'm
excited to try it.
Kato, I know. Honestly, you've also been. Yeah, y'all should give it a look. It is at least watch a stream. I know friend of the site Will Smith has been streaming it because I opened up Steam the other day and it was like, hey, here's your friend Will Smith streaming this game, and I was like, word, is that. Did he say yet? Is that just happening? What's going on here?
A different Will Smith, but someone did just drive past my apartment like 2 days ago, blasting, getting jiggy with it.
Shout out to that person. Thank you.
Shout out to that person.
Kato, this is, I think, another kind of chill game experience. I mentioned this earlier that you've become a Hanafuda master, apparently.
I'm a Hanafuda master. The game told me to, so it must be true. So I was on vacation. Me and my wife went up to a Airbnb for a couple days to get out of the city. And I brought my Switch. Fucking forgot my charging cable. Because otherwise I probably would have ended up playing Hanafuda the whole weekend. But I didn't. Only played it for like 4 hours and totally drained the fucking battery. But, I went back into the Worldwide Classics Clubhouse Games 51 Worldwide Classics is the title, and started to pick through a couple of the other games, specifically Aura Hack on Twitter made this shit post the other day replacing the word Barracuda with Hanafuda from who is that? What band is that?
The song Barracuda.
The song yeah.
Heart, right?
Yeah. Which was very funny. But then I was like, you know what? I actually haven't tried Hanafuda out, and it's, you know, it's always, people always mention it as like, it's one of the earliest things that Nintendo published, you know? They have those cards. And it turns out it's super fun and like very addicting, and I love it so much. It's essentially kind of a card matching game. There's 12 suits. And each suit has 4 cards, and each suit is like a different month, basically. And they have various scenes that you would associate with that month. Like February has cherry blossoms. And essentially what you do is you have a hand, and then you have some cards out in front of you between you and your opponent. And you can pick up cards to add them kind of to your collected pile if they're from the same month. But in order to make hands that give you points, those are actually kind of unrelated. They're made up of cards from different piles. So like each set of 4 for each month will have 2 kind of what is called chaff, which is just like nothing cards, throwaway cards. You can technically get 1 point if you collect 10 chaff, and that's a kind of like the baseline, the lowest hand you can make. Then there's an option of like they're either called seeds or some of them have animals on them, and like that's kind of like the second tier of cards that you can collect and like make a hand of 5 of those to get points. And then there's some other like kind of more specific hands where you combine certain seeds with certain other ones called lights, which is like the moon. There's one with a lantern on it, and I'm not sure what, I think the other one's the sun. And then there's one that I can't really decipher what the light is in it, but it's like a scene of a pond or something. But so it's interesting because you can only get those cards by using cards from the same suit in order to kind of collect them. But you're trying to make groupings that are outside of each suit. Again, like I mentioned the first time I mentioned the Clubhouse games, different assists and stuff made it really easy to kind of pick up and play on like a base level and like skip right to the like, all right, I'm past trying to memorize 12 different suits of cards that I cannot still tell apart from sight because the game is doing that part for me. And I'm to the point of being like, okay, now that I don't have to worry about like actually picking out like, wait, is that the right suit to make a match? It's like, okay, these are the matches I can make with this hand right now. Which one is my best option to kind of collect the things I need to get good points, right? And I just, yeah, I got deep into a hole Monday night and ran out my Switch battery, which apparently it's good for like 4 hours of serious Hanafuda play. But I hit master. This is the first game that I mastered. Each game comes with 4 difficulties: normal, hard, challenging, impossible. And I was able to beat the impossible AI in Hanafuda in those 4 hours, which felt great.
Nice.
But also,
congrats to you.
Don't forget your Switch charger when you go away a place. Yeah. I wrote a tweet about this. You grab it off the dock, you toss it in your case, you're like, perfect, that's it. That's the Switch.
That's all I need. Nope.
if you want to play for more time. Yeah.
Here's what my suggestion to you is: get another USB-C cable and just put that in your bag at all times.
Yeah, that's
because
really
then you
could
always charge it off a laptop or off of, you know, even like a, I think like an iPhone, like, or like a, you know, wall mounted USB block thing. Yeah, exactly.
Totally. I need to get one of those extras and just leave it in the case so that I
just leave
always
it in the
have
case.
It. That's what I do with all my other like electronics. I have an extra like floater cable that I keep on whatever bag I'm usually using. But yeah, that was a very chill and great time playing Hanafuda for many hours.
Nice. Kato, I would be remiss not to bring up the other important thing that you were supposed to talk about. We wanted to talk about last week. The chillest of all chill games. Rob isn't here to stop you. Destiny 2.
Oh, Destiny is good again.
Is it?
Yes, it is. Here's the thing. It's good. It's good to me.
That's all that matters to me, Kato.
Yeah, right. It's so. They're back to a kind of form of storytelling and mission design that they used back in Shadowkeep, where each week there's a new kind of quest line that has different bits of, you know, there's like a opening mission, and there's a little bit of grindy bits in the middle that aren't too bad, and then there's like an ending mission that gives you a new set of lore, and all of this is voiced. They have basically the story right now is that the darkness, the unknowable like evil supposedly that caused the collapse of society and left humanity living in one city on Earth when they used to span, you know, the entire solar system with different colonies and stuff.
Which I have my doubts about, but we'll save that.
I have some theory. Okay, hold on. Let me just explain what's happening right now.
Yeah.
The darkness is back.
I'm excited.
It is in these form of these like pyramid looking ships. We got a glimpse of the first one of those back at the end. Actually, the end of Destiny 2, like the main campaign 2 fucking years ago, showed us an image of a pyramid ship like from a distance. And so they've been making a long journey to our solar system, and they're here now. And immediately, there's all sorts of great moments, because basically what's happening is we're getting Eris Morn, you know, favorite, you know, darkness soothsayer.
Yeah.
And the Drifter, who is a more recent character who also kind of dabbles in the darkness, but mostly in order to, like, run scams and get money. Like,
is that his deal? Because I know his end game was. Yeah,
no, it definitely feels like it's just like him getting by. He's like getting engrams and like getting, it's like his way of getting power is like through manipulating the darkness and getting guardians to kind of fight each other. And he's figured out a good scheme there. And like, that's just kind of his character too, is like this fast talking con man. And you're getting them because they've had experiences with the darkness, kind of being the point people for this expansion, which is some pretty fun, like, interactions, having the like really kind of verbose and like slow talking Eris Morn and like throw shade at the Drifter in certain ways, where he's like, it's a good, they have a good chemistry. So those parts have been fun, where like the new, there's a new, what's it called? A public event that is kind of like the main focus, the main repeatable activity, in this season. And, it's basically the Drifter setting up one of his pods that collects darkness energy under. So you're dunking motes of darkness the way you would in Gambit, but kind of out in the open world. And there's like increasing levels of difficulty and a couple of special mobs that like are a side objective to make it turn to a heroic version, which makes it even harder and you get better rewards. The kind of normal stuff you expect from public events, but kind of pushed to the nth degree. Like they're the last like tier of the like, there's like four levels of difficulty, and like the last tier is kind of almost at the like level max, which you usually don't see in public spaces because they want to keep those spaces available
open to everybody. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so like someone low enough level walks around and like they're just gonna get got by these things walking around. But it's fun, and you know, it's difficult in the right way where you're like, You're not completely locked out if you're not max level, but if you've been keeping up, you can still engage with it. And at the end of the quest lines, there's also a moment that you have where one of the pyramid ships is parked on Io, which is the last place before Earth that the Traveler started to kind of terraform. And so there's this spot, which was like the last spot the Traveler touched before the Traveler made its way over to Earth. And what has sprouted there is this kind of like weird fantasy looking ass tree that the darkness has decided to set as its drop point for these like message dead drops that they're giving us. These kind of encrypted messages that only Eris can kind of decrypt because she's like worked with the darkness so much. And well, here's where we get to the bit where I'm pretty sure this point, my theory, and this has been a joke theory for a while in the community, but is now, I think I'm going to put all my money on this, is that the Traveler is actually an egg. It's a big... The giant white ball floating over the last city of humanity.
I'm the Traveler.
Is an egg. The Traveler is an egg.
It's an egg.
The Traveler is an egg.
I have a lot of questions.
First, there's the superficial evidence. This each
look at
season,
that motherfucking egg.
Look at that egg. That's an egg. First is that each season has its own kind of symbol that they put on like armor and gear, so you know it's like, oh, this dropped from this season. This season's is like a little circle with one of the pyramid ships inside.
What's the season called again?
Season of arrivals.
Okay.
Arrivals.
What's a bigger arrival than an egg?
The arrival of a new life. Something being born is an arrival. True. It's like got one of the pyramid ships in a little circle, and it's just like, you know, that looks like a, you know,
the pyramid ships are the darkness, are like the darkness ships, right? Like they are literally pyramid shaped spaceships. Yeah. Big Necron energy.
There's also
my Warhammer fans out there.
Right. Are those the zombie ones?
Yeah, they're the zombie ones. They have big black. They are the darkness.
Okay.
They're not the darkness, but
The next thing is that they announced the next three expansions for the next 3 years, the like big fall ones that are like the biggest ones over on a stream, and the one 3 years from now is called Destiny 2 Lightfall, and let me grab the image for that.
Lightfall, like Nightfall, but which are the weeklies, except what if we're running those against the Traveler, who's supposed to be made of light?
Right. Uh-huh.
See?
It's all making sense. And the here, let me drop this for y'all. The
Be like,
logo for this is a pyramid ship, kind of.
I don't love keep your third eye open jokes, but Eris Morn literally has yeah, her third eye open.
Yeah, he has two eyes.
So I don't love them. I think they're kind of shitty. But
can you open that? Oh, wait, that file is wrong. Hold on.
What did you send me?
Send me the most.
Get rid of the word PNG. Just get rid of the word small for me.
Yeah, I see that. I see that.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. What did you send me? Wait, what is this?
This is the
Destiny has great lore by virtue of being the fucking dumbest shit in the world.
Yeah, okay. This logo is a black this is a pyramid inside of
the shape of, so you could see how
a circle.
If I guess that's the traveler. You know, you can see if you look at the bottom, you see the shadow broken parts where the traveler that has fallen off. So you can see how a pyramid ship would fit inside of the traveler and be an egg of a pyramid ship.
So is your theory then that the traveler doesn't exist? All of the travelers are here's okay. Let me lay out. I'm gonna rub my hands together like I'm Birdman real quick. So here's what we know. This is like real half-remembered shit from when I looked at the app 6 years ago and was like, yo, that sounds dope. The Fallen believe that the Traveler ruined their culture, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
And that they believe that they were loyal to the Traveler for a long time, and then some shit went down, and they're like, yo, fuck the Traveler, actually.
Correct. There's sects. There's some of them still.
Okay, sure.
Because they also
with a broad brush. No culture is a monolith. Yada yada.
Totally. But like the servitors, for example, are them trying to chase the idea of a machine god again. You know.
Right. Right. Yes. So
they're made from their own stuff.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a traveler.
Right.
What if there are just the eggs? Is this what you're saying?
Yes.
And that during the gestation period, the egg lets off light because it's gestating. It's pulling the darkness in, and it's like reflecting light out. And people are like, yo, this is great. That's God to me.
Yep.
Look at this. I could live forever. But in fat, and then each time you die, you're really feeding some sort of darkness energy in and helping the egg gestate.
Yep.
And then the egg eventually opens and it's like, nope, that's a big darkness pyramid or a dragon or some shit. I don't know.
It's a darkness pyramid for sure.
And then it fucks up your whole culture. And then you go, oh shit, there was never a traveler. There was never a traveler.
Yep. Yep. I think part of the thing here is the traveler as it's in its egg form is absolutely kind of giving away some of its true intentions. The way that it fucked over the Fallen was absolutely in that it gave them all this power and then decided one day to just fuck off and take its power with it. And so things collapse out of them under this power vacuum.
Right.
And so it's just like, it's obviously benevolent to a point until it doesn't seem deem you necessary anymore or find something better, right? And it moves on.
And hey, guess what? Peep game. Watch this. Get ready. I'm about to blow your fucking mind, Kato.
Yeah.
All right, ready? Who in Destiny 1, I actually don't even know what happened to this character. Whatever happened to the speaker?
Oh, the speaker died.
The speaker still around? Okay, well, guess what? Let me check this out. You ever look at the speaker?
What? Let me see.
Here's the speaker.
Yeah.
You ever fucking look at the speaker upside down? What's his head?
No.
His head is a fucking egg.
That's an egg. Kato. That's an egg.
Oh, no.
That's an egg. That's an egg, my guy.
Oh, fuck. Oh, Jesus
Christ. For the fucking egg.
That's an egg face.
That's my, an egg.
My man's
egg.
My man's face is an egg.
Bill Nighy knew all along.
What did happen to the speaker? He died in Destiny. He did die at the beginning of Destiny 2, right?
He died at the beginning of Destiny 2. He also admitted at that point that he never actually spoke to anything.
He's like, I'm a fucking phony.
He was a fake space pope.
Damn.
Totally. talking to no one.
Don't
just
you hate it when your space pope turns out to be a faker?
I hate it.
Yeah.
Fucking gotta hate it.
Yeah. There's a couple more things where the traveler was at one point the only known paracausal object in the universe, meaning that it broke all causality and rules of time flowing in one direction until we found a pyramid. And it turns out they're also paracausal, which seems like a startling coincidence that the only two things that we've ever found that totally break these things are this round thing and this pointy thing.
He fucking spitting right now. Kato, brother Kato. I love it.
Look.
Oh, man, can I get an amen out here?
Talk to me more about paracausality.
Yeah, I'm about to start speaking in tongues, please.
I'm so excited. Yeah, fucking each week we're getting new lore drops, some straight from Eris, and the first week was very interesting. You have a moment where you're kind of headed towards the pyramid ship, and the pyramid ship is like, you don't need, like, it's speaking to you through your ghost, and it's like, why do you bring weapons? You don't need any weapons. We're here to save you. And then you get pulled away. This is part of what's interesting about this conflict at this point, is that you get pulled away by a hive god. You get pulled away by Savathun, who has been also been hinted at since the beginning of Destiny 2, one of the sisters of Oryx.
Okay, so she's a sister of Oryx.
Yes.
Okay.
Witch
Queen. This is one of the other expansions coming out,
right? Yes, that expansion is, I believe, the one for 2021, next year. And you've got this idea, you've always had this idea that the darkness and the hive are kind of aligned in a way.
Yes.
And there's always a question of whether or not the hive are actually beings of darkness themselves, or just like beings that feed off darkness or are interested in darkness. And we're getting this conflict now here at this point where the darkness is here, Savathun doesn't want us to actually speak to the darkness directly. Which is throwing a wrinkle into like the ideas of what if any organization there is between these two entities. So that's also really interesting. Like, Destiny is at its most interesting when it's got all of these different factions and it's actually doing something with them apart from putting them directly in contact with just Guardians, right?
Yeah.
Like, it feels now, like, the season so far feels like we're in the middle of something way bigger than us, and like we're not really equipped. We're trying our best, but like even though we are like undying zombies that can be resurrected forever, we are pawns in whatever this game of like, you know, gods is about to happen, and that's really like good shit.
You and I talked back during, it was during Comic-Con that we had this conversation, Kato, about like what we wanted from the future of Destiny.
Right.
And I don't think we're going to get what we wanted because the lack of a Destiny 3 on that roadmap makes me feel like we're not going to get the thing where you and I were like, it would be sick if the next big Destiny thing allowed you to play as a Fallen. But also that it was like literally it ended up breaking down as around factional lines that like the Guardians and the Fallen were like fighting on the side of quote unquote light, and then the Hive and the Vex were like on the side of darkness, and then you kind of like throw in with one side or the other, and there's a whole new PvP angle and blah 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 blah. And I don't think we're getting that, but what I think we're getting, what it's narratively, it actually sounds way more interesting than that, because it feels like they're actually treating these factions as more complex than that. Like the truth of the scenario is actually a lot more complicated than just the light versus darkness stuff that I think we both kind of assumed they weren't going to.
I never thought it would be in Bungie to get that complex, or like beyond like having this conflict be very easily translatable to you are shooting the bad guys always, right? Yes. Because ultimately the verbs in this game haven't changed at all. You know, it's still you shoot the enemies or whatever. But I still think they're able to build an interesting narrative around those aspects of the game, and it still, you know, it has that thing where it doesn't feel as integrated as it ever could be in a game where like your verbs are matching up with that narrative. But it's still the much more interesting version of this FPS to have that sort of narrative be the backdrop to, you know, all of the activities you're doing. We might get some small version of that, because it feels like this next expansion that's coming in September called Beyond Light, they showed an intro cinematic for it. And the intro cinematic has three people gathering, which three is a special number for Destiny and Guardian specifically, because there's always been three vanguards. There's been one for each class. there's always been three elements, solar, void, and arc. And one of the big things that they sold this up front with is there's actually a fourth element that we're going to get, and which means new subclasses, which is exciting, but also like new, some new wrinkle into how the elemental system works called stasis. And these three people gathering, which were the Drifter, Eris Morn, and a long returning from the past, who knows how she got here, the exo stranger from Destiny 1, the I don't have time to explain why I don't have time to explain lady. From the original campaign that we have not seen since that original campaign in Destiny 1 are back. And this formation of a second trio of like well-known characters definitely feels like some sort of a counter vanguard to the other vanguard, which is kind of broken at this point.
That's 100% right. Yeah. Right. Like that they would become the NPCs that you go to for your quests or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
That makes sense. Kato, I'm like galaxy braining as I look through the lore Wikipedia now, because I'm like, according to the lore book unveiling, which seemingly narrated by the darkness itself, both the light and the darkness have existed before the beginning of time, and thus before the universe came into existence. That is literally the chicken and the egg. The question of like, what came first, the light or the darkness? And if they're if their fucking big reveal is literally a chicken or the egg joke, I'm going to shit myself.
God, I used to be like from the beginning, from Destiny 1, people were like, that's an egg. Look at that big egg in the sky. That's an egg. And it's mostly a joke. But if they actually, like, if this ends up being the fucking traveler was an egg all along, I will lose my shit. But I'm also ready to bet on it. I'm also like, that's what absolutely where they're going. And I'm loving every moment of it.
That I love about Destiny lore is that they start out with really engaging and interesting premises, and then they're like, what if the resolution was 90% dumber?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, that's my fear.
It's like the It's Always Sunny approach to storytelling, right? The highs are really, really high, and the lows are really fucking low. They're really
fucking low. They really are. They truly are. So
the gang finds out the guardian was the speaker was an egg. Yeah,
exactly. Oh God. Well,
it's T minus 3 minutes until the Sailor Moon ColourPop collection restocks. By the
hell
way,
hell yeah!
Refreshing that page.
Great.
Kato, thank you for keeping us up to date. I'm so glad we came back to Destiny to talk about this. Like hearing the thing that's still fucked up to me is just like anytime we talk about Destiny, I'm like, I want to play Destiny, and then I play Destiny for like 4 hours, and I'm like, this still isn't exactly what I want from it, because what I want is a game that digs into all of this stuff all the time. And it's not that. And they shouldn't make it that, because that's just for me. I know it's just for me. Maybe they should.
I was going to say.
This is a good season for that, it feels like. Because you're getting a lot of that in, even like in mission, in cutscenes, like that's not just regulated to the lore books, which is a big problem, where like in mission you'd be like, you are the space cop, go shoot the baddies. And like that's all you would get from the voice actors even. but this time around, it feels like a lot of that is being integrated. You're getting kind of a little extra flavor from the lore instead of it, the lore being where the interesting stuff is and all of the in-game cutscenes being kind of like, we're not really talking about this very much. This definitely would be a good season if you're interested in that stuff to hop back in. Especially as they kind of ramp up to the September thing, which should be really interesting too. I'm loving it. I'm loving Destiny again.
I'm sorry. I have been thrown off because I got a PR email just now, a press release. I don't know if I should even broadcast this because this feels like it's too. I feel like I don't know if I should trust it. Normally, I just trust press releases when they come in that they're telling me the whole truth. And that I can believe them and just repeat verbatim whenever it comes in, obviously. Because, why would a PR person lie to you about something? But this one says, Billy Mitchell, Donkey Kong and Pac-Man champion, has been vindicated by the Guinness Book of Records as they reinstate all of his previously rescinded records. After an investigation into the reports that Billy Mitchell cheated, they have decided to give back his records in a decision made announcing that they are legitimate records that Billy did not and that Billy did not cheat.
Wow. What
it took
the
more
fuck?
Than 2 years and an abundance of indisputable facts, eyewitnesses, and expert testimony to prove all of my records were legitimate, says Mitchell, who helped transform the category from the arcade into a competitive international sport. Fuck off.
Well, fuck that.
Their one key finding of the investigator, apparently. Wait a second. Yeah, okay. Is talking to someone who explained that what Twin Galaxy's new owners asserts about Billy Mitchell's score is simply not possible. There has never and will never be an emulsion board that plugs into a Donkey Kong machine. It's simply impossible for anything but legitimate hardware to have been inside of Billy Mitchell's machine. And then someone else basically says, after reviewing it and reproducing similar games, I can say this is legitimate gameplay. And then it seems like I do not see a reason why Billy would need to even use MAME or save states to film both games with his with this style of play. So
this seems a lot like he paid some people to say that he was so good at gaming he'd never need to cheat.
It seems like that. I would not explicitly allege that because the end of this is view lawsuit at blank.
It seems like it, but it could mean anything. It's,
who could say? Also, I clicked that link and it doesn't go to anything. This LA court case doesn't exist.
It's amazing.
This link is broken. I wonder if there was a lawsuit. Was there a lawsuit? Did he win a lawsuit?
There was. There was. Heather Alexander was covering that before she left to do the other side of the thing that we do. She was covering that. There was a lawsuit. And she was talking to these people like every day for a while. So they care a lot about Donkey Kong.
They do care a lot about Donkey Kong.
You know what? That part. That's beautiful.
The part where they care about Donkey Kong, that's beautiful to me.
That's video
That's
games.
What I call...
Fuck. Well, now I gotta, okay, I hope someone digs into this and gives me all the details. Anything else anyone wants to shout out before we wrap things up today?
I gave myself a sick manicure just now.
Hell yeah.
Oh, shit, the restock started.
Get your color form. Good luck.
All right,
Emmanuel, it's always good to have you on. Where can people find you on the internet?
As always, ass.bargains is where you can find me.
One more time.
Ass.bargains.
Ass.bargains, right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I always forget. Where do I get those bargains?
Wait. Emmanuel, your fucking Twitter icon
is an egg. What do you
this
know?
This is what I'm saying. I'm the traveler. Know? It's me. I'm inside the egg.
Tell me your secrets, egg.
God. Sorry, I was thinking about Destiny. I was like blank, just like, what else? What else fits the egg? We need to stop this. You find me on Twitter at @Austin_Walker. You can follow everything we do, twitter.com/waypoint. Hey, Emmanuel, I want to send a thanks to whoever created the new Vice Games internal channels and just called them Waypoint again. It's happening, baby. One by one, we're going to fucking take it back.
We're gonna win it back.
We're in a new Slack now. This is the third new Slack this year. The second new Slack I've been in this year, I guess.
I am in six different Slack, not rooms, but like
servers.
Six different
Slack servers.
And they're all for work.
They're all for work. And some of them are done now, right?
No. Yeah.
Wow, you're in six currently?
I'm in
Damn.
Yeah.
I'm in four different active Slacks that are work related.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Janice and I are DMing now because the fucking Sailor Moon thing sold out in under a minute.
Jesus Christ.
That's depressing.
I know.
Damn. It's like a secret drop.
We're so upset. Yeah. It's so, it's like one of the best palettes they've ever done. It's hyper pigmented, so it actually shows up on like brown people.
Damn.
I'm so upset.
I'm sorry. So
anyway, I was not listening at all to anything anyone said.
Where can people find you on Twitter to find out more about everything going on in your life, Gita?
At XOXO Gossip Gita, look there to see whether or not I got this palette.
Good luck. I hope you get the palette.
Thank you.
Kato.
At @A_Kato_appears. You can see pictures of my cat.
Please go see pictures of Kato's cat. Kato's cat is adorable. So it's a beautiful, beautiful cat.
I love her.
Takes a love pet like so no much. Problem.
Yeah,
truly,
absolutely.
Truly does.
Yeah.
All right. And as always, you can send questions into gaming@vice.com. We'll try to do a question bucket episode soon. I know that we got some piling up in there. As always, also thank you to Bowen for letting us do the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. To find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. I hope everyone has a good Juneteenth. I hope everyone has a good weekend. I hope everyone continues to protest and make noise and continue the struggle for justice at home and everywhere else, honestly. Until Monday, where we will be back on Monday, I believe. I hope everyone, as always, says, fuck capitalism. Go home.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello.
Hello.
Ella ran in the room yelling. She's not going to like moving very much at all.
Oh, cats hate moving.
Emmanuel, you're muted yet again.
Sorry, I said cats hate moving.
Cats hate change. My cat especially hates boxes. So, not going to be a good time for her, I don't think. Manuel, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited that it's the end of the week.
Yeah, it is the end of the week.
I'm excited not to beef with anyone for the rest of the day.
I'm excited that you're not going to beef with anyone for the rest of the day, Emmanuel.
No beefing.
Living up. No beefs.
Beef-free lifestyle.
God, you're really great. I'm sorry. I do live a beef-free lifestyle. I don't eat
right,
meat.
Yeah,
I don't beef with people.
You know? Yeah. The new online veganism. No beef.
Online veganism was you don't beef with anyone. Drake is going to rap that line in like 6 months.
Oh, fuck.
Tell me I am wrong. No, I am not wrong. Yo. I listened to the Toosie slide and Drake sounds like he's in prison and he was forced to record that song.
I don't know.
What's happened to popular culture?
It's in quarantine.
Boo. See. What day is it? It's 18th. Am I expecting anything?
What
yes, I am.
Day is it? Wait, we have an extra day. It's not the end of the week yet.
No, we have Juneteenth off, dude.
The fuck?
Yeah, it happened yesterday while you were out. We were told we have Juneteenth off. Yesterday while you were out, you got an extra day off, and Pokemon Snap was announced.
Oh, fuck.
So welcome back. Now fuck off.
Hello, I am back.
Hello.
I
just told Kato that we have tomorrow off.
Do we?
Missed.
Yeah.
Yeah, Juneteenth, baby. Free the slaves.
Did Vice... We can take it off. But did Vice tell you?
Jason told me.
Okay, yeah. Good. Shout out to Jason.
Jason is Vice. Yeah.
Jason's Vice now. Sorry, Jason.
Vice now.
That's on you. Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Una? Is that her name?
Yeah. Because she has one eye.
Yeah. Baby. Hi.
I don't know if you can
hello.
Hear her purring, but
how are you
right
doing?
Now.
She loves being held. She's like, I'm good with this. Uh-huh. I love to be held.
She's very cuddly. And she'll do it on purpose,
that's the
too,
best.
Which is the best. Well, like,
yeah.
It's not just you have to go to her, but like, You'll be there and she'll like come over and lay on top of you and just be like, this is where I am now. It's amazing.
Hi.
I love her so much.
The absolute best.
Hi, Gita. Look. Say hi to Una.
Oh my god, hi, baby.
Such a good baby.
Una.
She's a little so baby.
Yeah.
She's a little baby. Oh, she just wants to be a friend.
It's true.
That's all she wants. Oh my god, I love cats so much. I'll save it for the show. Never mind. I was going to talk about a video game, but you know what? The fool's mistake to talk about a game before the pod.
Going for a pod. I mean, what's the game so I know how to throw to it?
I'm playing Hades.
Oh, nice.
I've just started just playing a ton of Hades every day.
Hell yeah.
It's really fucking good, but I'll talk about it on the pod.
Cool. Yeah.
Is this feels bad on my end.
Yeah, you're quite
it's bad now. It's bad now.
Yeah. It's not good.
Just wanted
dude.
To show y'all cat.
Good cat. I love that cat.
I really want to meet that cat.
Yes.
She's
amazing.
She's so beautiful. She's so beautiful.
She's
great. Absolutely driving me wild.
I love her.
Hello,
I love her.
Oh, I see your face.
Hey.
Hello.
It's
I love
Emmanuel.
Her stripes. The stripes go on her belly. It's cute.
Oh, the stripes are so cute. Did she have a infected eye?
I didn't actually ask what happened, but they removed it surgically, which is why she's wearing the cone, and also spayed her at the same time, so it's like double duty.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, you might as well. If you have the eye has to go, just do the other thing at the same time.
Yeah. What's really adorable is that because she can't like lick her paw to kind of like rub her face, she's taken to coming up to me and like licking my fingers and then just like rubbing against my, like
oh
using
my
fingertips as her paw instead to clean
Very
her face.
Cute.
It's
Very
impossibly adorable.
I'm
she's
going to die.
I had a friendly cat, but this is the friendliest cat I've ever met in my fucking life, and it's a fucking
God.
Joy.
She just wants to be loved by Kato specifically. That's what she's asking for.
Oh, no, what's great, too, is that actually our last cat definitely favored me over Christina, but immediately she's like, everyone, doesn't matter, which is a very good thing.
That's so great.
Like, my last cat, like, didn't hate Christina or anything. She would still cuddle up to her, but she, like, would always, like, when we're both sitting on the couch, she would always kind of come over and sit on my lap for some reason. Like, I don't know why she, like, stuck
this
to me.
This cat is just a slut. This cat just wants everyone's love.
Yeah, everyone's
Listen.
Love.
Wear it with pride. She just believes in free love. I understand that. Who said that human beings are most well suited for monogamy? Anyway.
No.
Just had that conversation so much. just some other people while I'm like, great, but anyway, yes. My cat, she started coming to me every morning and like getting more and more cuddly against the side of my body. And just like demanding that I basically turn my body into a big letter C so that she can cuddle in the sort of
Good.
Cave, the concave space.
Yes.
Where my abdomen was. Yeah. And then she just purrs. And it's like, well, how are you supposed to get out of bed at that point?
You're stuck.
What are you supposed to do? You're stuck. That you're the cats now. You belong to the cat.
You are for the cat. You're for the cat only.
True. That's true. You gotta accept, Kato, it's been wonderful to have you as a podcast producer, but cat ownership, I know, will be more important at all times.
Yeah, that's true. All right, ready to clap?
No.
Emmanuel?
Yes, I'm not ready to clap. Sorry, I was looking at something. What's the site? Time.is?
Time.is. So yeah, time.is, and then let's clap at 55 seconds. Plenty of time.
Nice.
Did we get four?
I think so.
Okay.
Everybody clap.
So on point that we didn't hear one. I didn't hear one.
I heard three. I heard myself and three others.
Okay. I was like, wait, okay. All right.